The difference between medicine and poison sometimes is only dosage. Consider a diseased limb. Amputation, horrific and grotesque, is necessary for the larger health.
The child is not a diseased limb. Sorry, like, is that what you're all into, that, like, killing children and that? So maybe that's just me, but I kind of draw a line there at child murder.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Kirk.
And this is Moon Knight Cast, Episode 2.
This week we're covering Moon Knight Season 1, Episode 2, Summon the Suit. That's like a classic comic book kind of title. You know what I mean? Like a 1960s title for a comic, I think. Summon the Suit.
I mean, you know what I mean? What it makes me think of, and probably no one listening is going to know what the hell I'm talking about. I'm kind of hoping you do, is that old 80s show, The Greatest American Hero.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, I grew up watching that. Yep.
Yeah, I love that show. And this
the
episode.
The blonde curly hair and the red suit.
Ralph.
Right?
His name was Ralph Hinckley, and then Ralph Hinckley shot Reagan, so they changed his name to Ralph Henley or something. But anyway, I loved it because he was this unassuming guy, and he got this alien space superhero suit. And at first, he didn't even want to use it. So it kind of reminds me of Steven in this show, reluctant about the whole thing.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. No, I can see that. That makes sense.
Luckily, it's still good, I would say.
Still good, man. It's still good.
The first episode was good, and the second episode's, I thought, was just, for me, it was the same. But
you know what? I'm gonna one up that. Yeah. I'm gonna call that, and I'm gonna raise you. It's probably one of my most favorite Marvel Disney episodes, Disney Plus show episodes so far.
You just put all the chips in right in the middle of the table.
I did. I just threw them all in there. Just went right for the whole.
That's great.
Pie. You know, the pace I thought was perfect, and of course a lot of that's the writing, the character development and evolution of all the characters. You know what I mean?
Yep.
The dialogue, the humor. There was some of it in the first episode. There was so much more in this one but was appropriate because it fit the character. You know what I mean? It's mostly coming from Steven. Mm-hmm. The reveal of the new suit was fantastic. The intro even of the heroine, you know, was unique. And I thought, you know, it wasn't just, oh, hi, this is so, you know, I mean, it was like.
It was interesting.
It was like, yeah, it was interesting. And her part, you know, in the whole situation unraveled really quickly. Mm-hmm. And, the full Moon Knight action sequence on the roof.
Yeah.
You know, that was just, we needed that. You know, we really needed that at this point. Yeah.
I mean, last week you were saying that you wanted that pretty much last week, right? And I think that because it was a really good episode last week, aside from that it was actually a good move to just give us a little teaser and leave us wanting more, because now it was even more satisfying to see it here. Right. But if they had done that again, then no way, that would have been too much.
right
not to show it, you know.
No, I agree it worked out really
but it
well.
Was fantastic
and,
though,
and then like the credits on this show,
yeah,
both
so
episodes
great.
I freaking love them, and the music that they use over it, and for me they're the closest so far of any of the Marvel Disney Plus Marvel shows to come to the or close in terms of matching the Netflix shows like Daredevil and Jessica Jones, which had wonderful credits. I was talking to my son after we watched it the first time, and I was like, you know, I always used to watch the intros for the Netflix shows and
every
the
time.
Disney Plus shows. Yeah, I don't watch the credits. This one, I watch the credits
at the end, and, though.
Well, that's because the Marvel shows don't do the intro, or at least not all, they haven't all.
It's real
had
quick,
the, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, and I just think that I was just really impressed with the episode.
Yeah, I agree about the credits at the end. And if you are listening to us and you didn't bother watching them, it's worth it just to sit there and pay close attention.
It's yeah, there's a lot really of symbolism beautiful. And yeah, and just beautifully done. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I loved it too. I loved seeing Moon Knight in action and I thought it was funny, and I really dug Ethan Hawke's portrayal even more in this episode
yeah.
than last time. Yeah. It was interesting.
Absolutely. I agree.
Kind of I agree. More complicated and stuff. And, it's a little less dark.
He's scary. He was scary.
Yeah.
He's becoming scary because he's sociopathic. You know what I mean?
He is.
In a kind of like in that, like the Kingpin way, you know, from the Netflix shows, like very, like he's calm and quiet and in control, yeah. but there's this storm behind him. You know what I mean?
It is. But yeah. for me, I mean, I don't know. Did you watch The Vow on HBO?
The Vow? No.
It's a docuseries about this cult called.
Oh yeah. The cult. Yeah. yeah. I saw parts of some uh-huh. episodes. Yes.
And,
yeah.
and the really good thing about that, the way they laid all that out, it was a bit too long. They should have gotten to the point quicker, but the first episode only showed the positive side of the group, where they showed what you can get out of it and how you can improve your life and, you know, how you're looking at yourself and improving yourself. And the people looked so happy to be there, and the people in charge seemed like they really wanted to help, and they were cool and everything. And right. so my point is that you came away from that going, yeah, I might join something like that. Like, it looks cool. I mean, I know this is a series about a cult, so probably not, but after that, you're feeling it. Right. And when I'm kind of,
well, you're understanding, having sympathy for why people could easily get ensnared.
Only that, but I was feeling like that looks like fun. And
okay. Now I'm worried about you.
Yeah. But I mean, that's what I think when you see, I'm going down this path a little bit, but it's not really an aside because this is about a cult, this show, Moon Knight.
Yeah.
But when
yeah,
you see yeah. these people who get into these cults, and your first reaction is, I'd never fall for that. They're so stupid. But I think smart people can get caught up in stuff like that because it's presented in a way where you're doing something good for yourself and for the world. And you really believe that. And then it slowly turns bad, you know? And right. it's like that whole thing about the frog and the boiling pot of water. I could see myself. I mean, I think there's levels of cultism in a lot of different things that aren't full blown cults, where we let ourselves get kind of caught up and then we start realizing, yeah, this isn't really healthy. But anyway, when Harrow, is that his name? Ethan Hawke's character.
Yeah. Yep.
Was walking Stephen Grant around. I'll get into more detail in one of my points, but I was sort of like, wow, he's really playing this just like that first episode of The Vow, where it seems like, wow, you're doing a lot of good things around here.
Right, know? Right. Well, I'm sure he did a lot of research on cult leaders yeah. and stuff. And yeah.
You'd think so, yeah. Okay, what's yeah. your first?
No, I got that too. I got that too, you know?
Yeah.
And
it was good. Yeah. I like that better than just, I mean, by the end, he seemed like, okay, you're a bad guy. But I like it when they're a little more complicated. And we also yeah. got the bad side of Khonshu here too. So it's not so black and white.
Well, I think it also played so well because of Steven's character and his being someone who's in this kind of middle of this trauma that's going on in yeah, his life.
He needs help.
And he's timid and yeah, he needs help and he's looking for help, and they kind of set that up. And when he gets fired, by handing him, you know, oh, here, check, you know, you should go see these people and they can help you. And this idea that he needs help and everything else. So there's kind of, you could sense that it was appealing to him. You know,
yeah.
until of course he started to hear about
the child
killing. Predeterminism. Yeah, the child killing, the predeterminism. Oops.
Put a little damper
back
on it.
Backpedal. That's right. Tap the brakes.
Okay, what's your first point?
My first point was the evolution of Steven.
Hmm.
His fight to stay in charge while also coming to terms and starting to accept the duality that's in him, you know,
mm-hmm.
And the great dialogue and humor between him and Mark. And sometimes it had me rolling.
Yeah, me too. That's the thing. It's actually funny.
Yeah.
Like, I laugh. I catch myself laughing.
And just in a way that's like, God, I could relate to that. If this was happening to me, I'd be saying the same thing. You know what I mean?
Hello, man in the mirror.
Yeah, that's, oh shit. I am really losing my shit now. I love seeing him waking up and becoming, you know, more confident too, you know, and through that, you know, like you said, like when he's in that scene with Haro and starting to come to terms with the fact that this guy's a baby killer, basically, you know, he starts to stand up for himself. I think that this whole episode was about a lot of things, but one part of it that was very important for me was the Steven's maturity, Steven's coming to terms with, you know, his inner struggle, but also accepting it and then starting to get some strength from that. Mm-hmm. In other words, when we're in denial or not looking at things or seeing things, we are weaker than, even though we think we're helping ourselves, we're usually weaker than when we accept the truth of our situation and can then stand up for it.
Work from the place of what's actually going on.
Exactly. And I saw a lot of that in his character in this episode. You know, he has a strong, as a character, he actually has a very strong moral compass. And you see that in that discussion with Haro, you know, when he brings up the killing of the child, you know, because what if something they might do in 30 years can't be right. A thought can't be evil. You know, this, he's, you know, what I'm starting to feel like this show is going to show us is that these, they're not avatars. They're avatars for Khonshu, but the different forms of his personality each have important parts that make a whole person.
Mm-hmm.
Know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, often how dissociative identity disorder works. Like these different personalities are developed because of some need in the person's life that isn't being met, and you need a certain kind of personality to meet that need.
And I think that, you know, Stevens is that he's more caring. He's more more centered morally, doesn't want to hurt people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And those all, and he's starting to stand up for those.
That's exactly why he won't give over to Mark, because I think his most formative experience with Mark is when he had those people trying to get the scarab, and then he woke up and they were all dead. I mean, it was funny in the moment, kind of, it was a little shocking, but if you can imagine that actually happening to you, where you open your eyes terrifying. And there's dead people around and you realize you did that, you're like, oh, I don't want that.
but also within the same episode, he does come to terms with there are things that Mark does better than him, and that he needs the Mark in him, just like Mark needs the Steve in him. And when he was fighting the jackal, he had to turn over, and he realized he tried his best, but he's, you know, there are parts of him that only Mark can do. You know what I mean? And, I just thought that was great.
I mean, in particular, I think because the whole episode he's fighting not to let Mark take control. And by the way, I think that's a huge part of what makes this series work so well. If not for the Stephen Grant character, it would be more of a straightforward badass guy trying to prevent evil, boring.
Right, exactly. No, I agree. I agree.
It's that struggle with the Stephen Grant character. But he gave over because Mark Spector said, hey, if you don't let me take over, these people are going to get hurt. So,
and right, exactly.
And that's the whole thing.
And that moral compass steps in and says, well, you know, my needs are less, and my single needs are less important than the needs of this many people here. You know, I mean, that's an old adage. It's often brought up in movies, you know, the famous Star Trek, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one. But, you know, I agree. And this is the first time we see him voluntarily give over to him. This whole episode was about his growth, his acceptance of the duality of his personality.
Yep. Although so, I'd say it's the second time. Because in the bathroom, he kind of did there too. In the first episode, right? When the jackal was about to eat him.
Yeah, maybe. I'd have to go back and look at it. But you're ruining my point.
Well, in that case, it was self-preservation. Like, should I get eaten or?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, you see, you saved me there. Thank you. You shot me down and then threw me a parachute.
That's kind of how I do it.
Yeah, I think. I mean, obviously he knew he was going to die and that was no good.
Yeah.
But here he was giving up. He wasn't going to die because he had the super suit on, you know what I mean? But he wasn't going to be able to protect people.
Right.
And so he was voluntarily giving up not just to self-preservation, but for the preservation of others.
Right, right. Exactly.
Which comes back, yeah.
This wasn't going to be my first point, but since we talked a little bit about Harrow, let me just go into that. Like the morality of Harrow and Emmett versus Khonshu. And Ethan Hawke or Harrow walking Steven around, being very gentle, playing soccer with the kids a little bit, saying that whole area had the highest crime rate and it was truly heartbreaking, but now people don't lock their doors and they feel safe and they're growing tomatoes and raising goats and learning languages and watching nature videos. Goats,
which are traditionally sacrificial animals, by the way.
Right. That's the cynical dark side of it. Yeah. They're playing that Grain of Sand, Bob Dylan song.
Yeah, they did. They played it again. Yep.
And so I thought like, this is pretty effective. And the part where Harrow faltered. Well, no, actually another effective thing he did was he was kind of disparaging towards Khonshu, but in a way that feels like he's allying with Steven against Khonshu because Steven doesn't like Khonshu.
Right. And he's like, he's trying to manipulate him that way.
Yeah. He's like, can you see him right now? Kill him. What's he saying? Is he telling you to kill me? Break his windpipe. Yeah. Well, just remember, you don't have to do everything he asks. You don't have to listen to him. It's okay. Right. Look, all he can do is blow the wind without your permission and flicker the lights. And that's another thing cult leaders will do is say, look, this bad thing out there, I can help you feel better about it. And he did. Like, I think that was very anxiety reducing for Mark to hear all that stuff, you know?
Right.
Like, he can't do anything. Don't worry. You don't even have to listen to him. And, but then where he messed up, what I was going to say a second ago is he said, when it came time to persuade him that what they're doing and what, Amit wants to do, judging souls and killing people is the right thing. It started off maybe okay. You know, hey, people don't want to hear good news. They'd rather cling to their fear and pain. And Amit will light the path to good by eradicating the choice of evil and all that. And he was saying that, you know, Khonshu punishes those who've already walked an evil path, but his retribution comes too late. But then when Steven asks, would you kill a child for something they might do? And instead, what I was thinking Harrow should say, if this is actually true, is no, we can tell for sure when someone's going to do evil. But instead he said, sometimes you have to amputate limbs to save the body. And to me, not directly answering that question about, would you kill a child for something they might do? It means,
I think it answers that, but go ahead.
Sorry. Well, it means he doesn't know for sure whether they're going to do evil.
I don't know. I don't know if it, I think that he rather, it made it easier for him to justify it by changing the metaphor, creating a metaphor for it instead of saying straight up, well, yeah, some kids will become evil and they have to be killed. Instead, it's more like the whole of the entity, whether it's our spiritual life or people or whatever, you know, the body, for instance, you know, might have a limb, i.e. the child, that has to be sacrificed. You know, it's painful, it's gross, it's it's horrible, but it's necessary.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Yeah,
that's
so
how I interpret
if
that.
The moral question is, like, would you kill baby Hitler? You know, that's one question, and maybe that's what it's
yes.
And that's what, yes. So you're saying you would join this cult then, right?
I'm a cultist, what can I say?
Because, I mean, what I was thinking is, okay, that is one question that would be tough for me to answer, but would you kill a baby who may become Hitler, but maybe not? Then absolutely not.
I think here's the deal. If we're going to play this game, if you can go back and do that, then you should be able to go back and change Hitler's life.
Right.
Enough so that direction doesn't happen.
So
and you see what I'm saying?
Maybe that's enough. That's, I mean, they really didn't, speak as clearly about it as you and I are right now. Like I wish that Harrow would have made clear, no, we know that they will be evil if left to their own devices or whatever. And then Steven could have said, well, maybe you can change that, because It's not clear to me that he knows. I mean, just because Steven asked, would you kill a child for something they might do? That word might is doing a lot of work for me. It's important. Like, it's not you know, but maybe that's why, because of what you just said, because there's a possibility to change the course instead of just nipping it at the butt.
Well, I think also because he's taking Emmett's word, you know, Emmett's the god, right? He's accepting that she is seeing correctly, and that's a matter of faith.
Who is Harrow? Is
Harrow? Yeah. You have to accept that this god who says this person will become evil, right, so we're going to kill them, is real. You know, really seeing. You're not. It's not like a court case. They're not presenting all sorts of evidence. It's just she's touching their soul and saying, "Oh yeah, this is going to go bad, so we're going to get rid of it now." So you kind of have to have a leap of faith.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out the morality of, like I said, of Khonshu versus Emmett, because Khonshu, Mark says, I serve Khonshu. I'm his avatar, which means you are too, sort of. We protect the vulnerable and deliver Khonshu's justice to those who hurt them. So we saw that can mean killing. At least apparently Mark killed all those people who were trying to get the scarab. Now, that was bad enough to deserve death, just trying to get the scarab. Now, I guess because if he thinks if they get the scarab, then Emmett could come forth and kill a lot more people. So it was like collateral damage or something. I don't know.
Correct.
But it's like these people are in this cult, and we know, at least in the real world, that people get out of cults sometimes and they turn the complete other direction and help bring other people out and reprogram them and become pillars of society. So like, it's, to me, it's like, all right, you're okay killing these people, but you're not okay killing people who will do something like what they're doing. It's not that much different. It's not that much better.
Well, I think that the issue is, it's around justice. And, well, justice is something that's served in retrospect,
right,
or you know what I mean? And that's just the nature of it.
But then the question is, okay, let's say that you could,
because people can have evil thoughts, they can have evil wishes and not act on them.
But let's say you could know for sure that someone will do something evil. They'll actually act. Then would you want to wait for them to do that, kill your mother, and then serve the justice on them, or take care of them before they have a chance to do it? That's Harrow's point.
Yeah, the problem is that you're taking the word of a god who's questionable. It's just like Khonshu. Khonshu's manipulative.
Now you're getting back to my original point, which is, do we know for sure that these people are going to commit evil? Because if we don't, then...
Right.
That, I think that's kind of what it seemed like with Steven. That's why that word might does a lot of work for me, is like, yeah, will you kill a child for what they might do?
Like in Minority Report, they had these metahumans with psychic powers that could actually see the future. And I'm assuming that was first measured and monitored to make sure that it was accurate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then once it was established that they were always correct, then that became the law. That's a kind of a gray area.
Right. Know? Like, I guess I'm just, to me, this argument, it really makes a difference. The debate is very much shaped by whether or not it's inevitable that these people are going to do something bad or not. Because if it's not inevitable, then it's definitely just bad guy territory. If it is inevitable, then you start to question, okay, then how bad does the bad thing have to be and stuff like that, you know?
Well, I assume you have to believe that it's not inevitable. You know what I mean? And that humans, you know, humans' ability to change is, and the course of events to have effect on people's future and everything else is relative and can't be definitive.
I think you're probably right, but I don't think we can assume that because it's magic and maybe the magic just knows. But no, I think you're probably right, though. Yeah. I mean, at least it's more interesting that way.
Then why would Khonshu
fight
be
it.
So concerned
right.
to fight it. Exactly.
Yeah.
There's something about it that's not right. And yes. she's been,
that's my, that's what I'm asking exiled. Myself. That's like yeah. kind of why I'm having this conversation in the first place. Cause
yeah.
if it is inevitable, then it really makes me question whether or not Harrow is right.
yeah.
And,
yeah.
And
I think we're going to find that Khonshu is just a nasty, evil, self-centered, good guy.
Yeah, yeah. A good guy you know with a bad mean? Attitude.
Yeah, with a bad attitude yeah. and who doesn't really care that much about people, but for some reason he cares about, you know, justice and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Or, so. I mean, maybe he just cares about
acts that
people
way.
Yeah. as a whole, but he, in order to get what he needs done, will use people for the greater good, you know?
Right, right.
Maybe. But it's not totally clear now.
I also thought the key, since you were talking about Harrow, you know, I thought too that it all kind of to flip the switch when he said to Steven, did Khonshu choose you because your mind was so easy to break or because it was already broken?
Double insult.
I love that. I know. I love that line. I love that line. That was good.
One last, just another little wrinkle is Harrow. Like found this dude who had picked up the scarab and says, I can offer you food and clothing, but you need to give me that. And then he just kills him. And I don't even think he weighed his soul.
Oh so, yeah, he did. No, oh, you see him did. Hold his, yeah. You see him, oh, you see okay, him go okay. through the usual routine where he takes okay, the okay. thing, that puts it between his wrists and like, then holds his hands. Yeah. Cause if he passes, then he'll become another member got of their group. You know
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. All right. What's your next one?
Oscar Isaac's performance playing both characters was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And I felt as if it was two completely different actors or people. I mean, he has got the, you know, they have such different mannerisms, how he carries himself. It's not just the, you know, the cheeky accent, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think people were worried that when they heard the accent and stuff that, oh boy, you know, but no, that was, it's the whole package, you know?
Yeah.
The way he acts in each character is completely different. It's a masterclass, in my opinion, of acting. And I just, you know, I sit and I was not too excited about him being chosen because I only really know him. And it's probably because he's such a good actor. I didn't know it was him, but in other things. But like you were pointing out that in Ex Machina, he was... he was the creator, right?
Yeah, he was kind of a brash asshole type.
I didn't even realize that was him. But
yeah, he's great.
All I remember him from is Star Wars where he plays Poe or something. And it's horrible. It's a horrible character. It's so flat, so one dimensional. I was like, this guy can't act his way out of a paper bag. But clearly, that was a writing issue. You know what I mean? And direction.
Yeah. I think I was already so impressed with him that in Force Awakens, which I did not like overall. I thought his relationship with Poe was pretty fun. I mean, with Finn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that to me was just, it's just stand up. Yeah. I watch it. And when I see Mark talking to Steven, it might as well be a different actor.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think he's gotten, some people didn't like the accent. I mean, there's different accents in England. And he sounds more
but it
like,
fits his whole personality
yeah,
too. The way he walks, the way his manner. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, and kind but, of, you know, dainty, a little bit dainty, yeah. you know, and it's just, it just works.
But he also has just an Englishness about him, not just the accent, but because I've been to England quite a few times over the years now because of Walker Stalker and just watching on TV and stuff. And it feels, there's a feel to the rhythms of how they move and talk and everything, not just the accent. And I think he,
right.
at least from my dumb American point of view, seems to have captured it pretty well. You know, I'd like to hear some opinions of people over the pond.
Yeah.
If you're listening and you're from England, let me know if you think I'm right or not. I'd be totally curious.
Okay.
I'm going to go right into the thrilling moments of the episode because I think it had quite a few, and I'll start with the very best one, which is when Steven finally did give control over to Mark, and you see the Moon Knight proper costume overcome him, climbs up onto the roof to get the jackal away from the innocent people, then jumping across the rooftops in the night past the crescent yeah. moon and sliding down and slamming this monster onto the spire of this church.
Yeah.
His back through his back. And then you see the moon in the background and impaling it. It was so cool.
Yeah. Really well done. Really well done. I love the transition when he puts his head up straight and back
yeah.
and then starts to turn around towards the camera and his eyes are white.
Yeah.
And then you see his head become enveloped in the costume. It was just, really, 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 really beautiful.
And these days we've seen so much superhero stuff that when you can do something like that and make it be like, whoa, this is cool. That's really something.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And they did such a good job and the costume looks great. And the suit costume looked really cool. I thought too.
Oh, yeah. On the money.
And, there was one other thing I thought looked cool, but I can't remember. What the hell else did I think? Oh, Khonshu. Khonshu looks really cool, too.
Khonshu's fantastic. And again, becoming as much a character in the whole story as any of the majors.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's as much a story about him as it is about everybody else.
Right. Yeah. He's a character for sure.
He is.
And that storage closet scene, talking thrilling moments, was equally yeah. thrilling to me, where he's like, arguing with Mark and then, no, I'm going to go take all this stuff and turn myself in, steps outside. And then the camera zooms in on his face and there's one light shining down on him. And he yeah. looks down this long, narrow, dark walkway and he turns his face away. But then you see like, was that a figure down there? And then he looks down the other and then a light comes on and there's no, and then you see Khonshu and then the lights start coming on and off quickly one by one towards him until it lights up and Khonshu's right there in front of him and he goes, ah, and screams. That was freaky and cool.
I saw somebody on a review on YouTube talk about the fact that the hallways in that scene reminded them of like some of the hallways we've seen in pyramid tombs and stuff. And how he was kind of, yeah, like a maze and you're running around through it. You know, I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, storage closets are like that too. I've been in a few storage closets and they're kind of creepy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then another sort of thrilling moment is when Harrow's giving his spiel to Steven and everybody's just sort of doing their own thing and being happy and satisfied and everything. But then when Steven starts resisting and Harrow gets more intense about it, the people all kind of stop what they're doing gradually and turn towards Steven and walk towards him. And that was super creepy.
Almost like they're obsessed. Possessed. Yeah. Not
they're
obsessed,
all like one, like one, yeah, one being exactly. Like a hive mind or something.
Yeah.
That was cool.
I think it's interesting the comparisons to Hydra. In like Winter Soldier.
Oh yeah.
And how there's this sense that this cult is all through. Cause like the two cops turn out to be cultists.
Yeah. And the museum workers last episode.
Yeah. And the museum, HR guy, it's implied a little bit, I think.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
So it's interesting, you know, they're all over the place, mm-hmm. which reminds me a little bit of that, you know, Hail Hydra thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's in on it and who's not.
Right. One of us could be, but I would never say.
Well, I'll keep my tattoo covered up.
Yeah, that's a clear giveaway.
That's right.
So I was also going to talk about Mr. Suit, but I don't want to steal all of these. Do you have anything
to say about that? My next one is that.
Okay.
In the comic, and again, I as I said in last week, you know, I've read very little Moon Knight, and I know a little bit of it from tertiary stuff and other things I've read. I've read a couple books.
Yeah,
but the Mr. Knight character was, you know, fairly new in the series. I don't know, last couple year, 5 years or something. And Mark Ellis, I think, wrote it.
Warren Ellis.
And my understanding is that it's just another personification of Khonshu. And I believe in Mark, I'm not positive, but I thought it was, and that, you know, he's more of like a detective than an action hero. You know what I mean?
Yeah. More, less violence and more cerebral maybe or something.
Yeah. And he works with the cops and, you know, but I think it was an absolute stroke of genius to make Mr. Knight the manifestation of Khonshu in Steven. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Moon Knight character that we see, you know, in the fight against the Jackal and everything, is the manifestation in Mark.
Right. And it's like that, each personality has their own expression of it.
Yes, exactly. And it just, it made sense, you know, and I'm not always a big fan of when they change things from the comic, but I think that was an excellent idea. And it also, it just makes it's one, it's logical. Plus now we get two very different heroes in one. You know what I mean? So when one comes out, it's not just going to be the same guy, just more laid back. Right. It's now a different personality to that hero. You know what I mean? And I think that's really cool. And their skills will be different. Their approaches to fighting and dealing with crimes and criminals and everything else will be different. And then of course, you know, it was an epic, you know, just like the transition from Mark into Moon Knight in this episode was epic. I thought the having him transform while he's falling and land in a traditional, as Deadpool would say, you know, superhero landing.
Yeah. Well, I think was like the same Black Widow pose that her sister made fun of her for.
Right. I mean, it was great. And it made logical sense too, because, you know, here she's telling him to bring on the suit, that he has the suit capacity, yada, yada, yada. Right. And he's like stressing
suit,
out.
Okay,
everything else. Suit. And what suit? Because the only suit he knows is a real suit. You know what I mean? It was perfect. It was just beautiful.
Yeah.
So I was really, really thought it was fun and a nice way to add a huge dimension to the story, you know, with now two different heroes as well as two different, you know, alter egos.
I wish I hadn't known that was coming. There's just so much.
How'd you know that was
spoilerage.
Coming?
I watched the episode too late. I first watched it last night, so I saw on the news sites and stuff. But I love the idea of it being an expression of Moon Knight through Stephen. What's his last name? Grant.
Grant.
Yeah. The only sort of negative for me is, I mean, it was fun for sure, but I'm really intrigued by this Mr. Knight in the comics. I haven't read it yet, but I want to now, because it's interesting to think of him being more of a detective, like you said, and stuff. And here it was almost like a joke, you know, he was kind of bumbling around and he punched.
Oh
him
yeah. It's the first time he puts it on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I hope it wasn't just a one-off and that he will act in different ways than the Mark Spector's Moon Knight, that he'll show up again and act in different ways. It could just be his only appearance.
Please don't say that. Please don't say that.
I don't know. I hope not. Yeah, it'll be better.
I love both. You know, versions. I hope that they use them both.
Use them both. Yeah. Okay. Cool. That was awesome.
My fifth point. Jumping over my fourth point, kind of ties into that concept. If you want me to,
go
there. I think we're gonna get one more personality.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, I've been saying that, right? Because the guy keeps calling him Scotty.
Right. Well, there's another personality in the comic called Jake Lockley.
The cab driver.
He's the cab driver. He's more of like a dark kind of dickhead kind of, I guess, who's, you know, kind of gets information off the street and everything else. At least that's in the comic. And plus, if from last week we talked about the roles of Khonshu in its not definition, but his bio, for lack of a better word, was that he was a warrior, the traveler, and the protector. So there are three different concepts tied to Khonshu. And so far we've got, you know, a warrior with Mark, and the traveler, I think I suspect is Steven, or maybe not, maybe Steven's the protector, but I think there will be a third. And then some clues for that were the security guard, like you said, calling him a different name. The date that was set up with the girl from the museum at first, you know, I'm sure I assumed it was Mark that had set that up, but now we know that Mark has a wife who he loves so much that he's doing all of this to try and protect her.
Well, I also thought Mark clearly doesn't want Steven to figure out that Mark existed, so it wouldn't be smart to go to Steven's work and set up a date with this woman.
Exactly. So somebody else that looks like him did that.
Right.
Thought Steven being a vegan, you know, and then being at the steakhouse means it, you know.
Yeah.
In the mirror in the museum gallery in episode one, just before he goes into the bathroom to fight the jackal, we see Mark's reflection. But there are actually two figures, if you go back and look. So it's kind of this implied that there's a third reflection there. In the elevator, when he gets dressed to go on the date as well, we see three reflections of him. In this episode, in the opening, he looks at his two reflections in that multi-mirror. He's like holding it on either side, and it's kind of it has like hinges and has like three or four yeah. different mirrors on it.
It's like
we just see two faces, but then the camera pans a little bit and you see a third reflection that's a little bit more out of focus in the third panel. All of this, I think, is previews or
signs. Yeah.
Signs that we're going to see foreshadowing, right? Then Layla says to him in this episode on the scooter, "Is Steven is this your latest secret identity?" Implying that there are others. You know what I mean? And then, of course, in the credits, there's that pic near the end of the credits where you see the three faces of Mark coming out of the Moon Knight headdress.
Mm-hmm.
It's three actual faces. So I just think they're all kind of indications that we're going to get, a third person. And the person at the end of the episode who's sitting on the floor in his underwear, the room's a mess.
He's drinking in Cairo.
He's drinking booze. I think that is the third character. And I don't think Mark would be getting bombed in the middle of all of this and trash in his room. You know what I mean? And plus we see that the mirror is shattered a little bit, which was done in the scene before when he said he wasn't going to let Steven out and he kicks the mirror and smashes it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then it's implied that there was another struggle and probably a transfer over.
Shut up,
again.
Jake Lockley or right. whatever.
So yeah. the big question for me though is, will we get a third suit?
Yes, I presume we will.
And that's going to be really, really interesting because they don't have that in the comics. So right. This will be a whole new, thing.
Anyway, there'll be something.
Moon pimp, daddy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, especially because there's a third one in the comics, I would think it'll show up in the show that has so far had a lot of elements from the comics. I heard also somebody was suggesting that that last one was not Mark. I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, he just had they transitioned from him with Khonshu, where he's like, okay, I just gonna do this thing for you and then you're gonna let me go, right? And Khonshu's like, well, you need me and I need you and you like it, and he's like, we had a deal. And then he's like, all right, but then if you leave, then you know who's gonna be your replacement. It's gonna be right. Layla. And so then, the next scene you see him drinking. I just felt like that went really, really well together with a guy who feels trapped and is like, fuck. But the mirror thing, I didn't think about that, the shattered mirror. So yeah, maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'm excited to see. We got four more episodes, so plenty of time for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to talk about the tone a little bit and some of the funny things. It is turning out to be more of a comedy than I thought it would be. I was kind of expecting more of a edgy, darker show.
Yeah, yeah, I was too.
And I'm just going to have to let go of that. I think I said that last time, but I really mean it.
No, you didn't say you had to let go.
I do need to let go of it though, because that's what I kind of wanted. But it's funny. It is really funny, and I enjoy it a lot. And it very much feels like a Marvel movie. That's the thing, is it's a little bit. I mean, it is different in its own way for sure, but tonally it's very much like the Marvel movies. And I guess I was hoping for darker, but I need to let go of that.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing too is that we now know what darker is, having watched Punisher and having watched Daredevil on Netflix. And when, they say, oh, it's going to be dark. And then they introduced the Netflix shows yep. on before they put this in. And everybody was like, all right, this, we're finally going to
totally,
you know, get something more mature. And not so much. I agree. Much. I'm enjoying it, but, yeah. but it's
a bit
that.
Disney-fied.
Yeah.
So but far. Given that, since I'm deciding to enjoy it for what it is, then, and I do enjoy it, I'm going to talk about some of the funny lines that I liked.
Okay.
The security guy at the beginning, going over the footage, and Steven's like, your mind's going to be blown by this. And then he's like, is that you? Yeah, that's me. Are you crying? Yeah, a little bit. Just wait. How long am I waiting? Well, maybe it's a different angle. And he's all of a sudden, he just starts running for no reason. And what are you doing, you donut? Wait just 1 minute. And he goes, you messed up the lose.
It was great.
That was a really good sequence. It also, he seemed really short. I think, I looked it up. Oscar Isaac's only 5'9", so he was pretty short next to that security guy.
Yeah.
And then later we find out, I'm like, at that moment, it was like, okay, wait, is he crazy? And I'm like, I should have known better, given that it's a superhero show. Of course, it's going to be real. But anyway, later we see the Jackal's invisible to everyone else.
Right. Was it my imagination, or was that screen of camera views and everything like huge or what?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
It was a wall. Like most of the security camera monitors are like, you know, like 12 by 12 or something. Those were like huge, full-on, large LCD screens. It was like 40 of them.
It's a good setup there.
Yeah. And it was right down in the main entrance.
The museums
convenient.
In England, I don't know if they're all free, but I think most of them are free, but maybe they get like government grants and things.
Yeah.
So they must be getting some good money from that to have a good big old security system.
Free healthcare and museums.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
So, this isn't super funny, but I liked how the HR guy was so very much an HR guy who was trying to, didn't even say, okay, you're fired. He was just trying to.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't even see it coming until no. he asked for the name tag.
Right. And neither did Steven.
I know. It was so like, well played.
Okay.
Only an HR guy could fire you and you walk out not being sure if you got fired.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was disgusting.
I know.
I take a shower after that.
Mark says, in the storage room, he's like, tell me what's going on. I forget exactly how, but Mark's like, I serve Khonshu. I'm his avatar. You know, we fight for justice, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, Khonshu, the Egyptian god of the moon? Yeah. Oh, my God. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
That's what I love about Marvel humor in their movies. They're so willing to make fun of themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And poke fun at and be self-deprecating. And I think that's, I think it's fantastic, you know?
It is. It's really good. Yeah. Because in a moment like that, you're like, it's so stupid. But then when you're actually fighting a big jackal, it's like a fucking badass.
That's right. Right. Exactly.
And then Steven tries to get Mark to go to sleep in the cot in the storage room. Cause that's how Mark can get control. And he's like, sleep. I'm never gonna sleep again. You hear
again,
me?
Yeah.
I don't care how bloody handsome you are. Just throw that in.
And that's funny because they both look identical. I know. It's hilarious.
And then when he's in his flat with Layla and you hear this rap at the door, oh God, they've come for me. I vandalized the toilet. That was good.
I thought it was interesting. It was a nice touch that he says that his favorite poet is actually her favorite poet.
Yeah, what
and
do you think that
was kind
meant?
Of, to me, it was a bleeding through of the personalities to each other. In other words, he doesn't have any recollection of her, but because Mark is part of him, he know there's some part of him that knows and loves and that Mark loves her.
Yeah.
That, you know, he knows a bit about her and that therefore he's attracted to that. Yeah. And the poem is an example of that, I think.
It was super interesting, though, because I get the sense, and maybe I'm just reading into it, that Mark, he probably did love those things about her, but never took the time to really study it.
Yeah.
And so Steven's such a sensitive guy that he did. And Layla was at first looked like she was impressed, but then she's like, I'm not buying any of this. Like,
well, I think it's not only that Steven is more sensitive, therefore he looked into it, but also Mark is now missing her.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so he's becoming more aware of the things that he should have been more aware of when he was with her.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. There were a bunch more funny stuff, but I won't go through them all. But do you have any other points?
Yeah, I liked that that we get it established that Mark's motivation at this point is to basically save his wife.
Right.
And it kind of changes your whole view of him as this, you know, kind of one-dimensional, ruthless soldier for hire kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He's actually a lot more complex than that. And I thought that was well done.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because after this episode, I'm not even sure that Mark cares about preventing Amit from coming forth or any of that.
He owes
Khonshu and doesn't want Khonshu to take over Layla.
Right, exactly. That's what it's about for him, you know. Going back to the firing scene again, I thought it was very symbolic the way he had to surrender his name tag, kind of in the way that in this episode he's kind of surrendering his own independence and identity, you know, as he begins to come to terms with the reality that he has these multiple personalities inside of him, you know. And it was very liberating because from that point on, you know, he starts to be more proactive, more involved, more dealing with the world that's really there, you know, and the war he finds himself in. You
know? When he had to push that name tag over, I was having a few different thoughts and feelings. One was, oh, he's fired, shit. But also, that feels like giving up the Steven persona. I probably reading too much into it, but then later Mark says something like, I promise when this is all over that you'll never see me again or something. And I'm like, what does that mean? That could mean either that Mark will recede or that maybe they'll just put back the wall up so they don't bleed through anymore, or super cynically that Steven will recede and never come back again.
I think I'm guessing that the reality is that if he were to break with Khonshu, he's going to die. He was resurrected.
Right.
You know, and it's going to come back to that whole, you know, the whole,
I think the deal wanted, is that he gets to stay alive though.
Well, they established with the two fake cops. He'll have to die
if they sever it.
Well, I don't know because that's the whole premise of him. Well, plus it's not going to be wrapped up in this series because he's going to go on to the movies.
Right. So, that's true. You know what I mean? The happy ending, I think, would be if all the personalities could kind of like Professor Hulk be merged into one.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And that allows them to have covered all of that background before they introduce them in the movies. Right. So they don't have to go through it in the movies. You know what I mean?
Okay. I think people don't really need to watch the rest of the series because we figured it out. You're welcome.
Damn, does that mean we're done podcasting? Yeah, only two episodes?
Shit.
I was having a good time. Let's see. I loved how it opens up with the sand that looks like Egypt. It turns out his bed, but then that foreshadows the ending, you know, and that they wake up, he wakes up in Egypt. I just thought that, you know, kind of bookended really nice.
Cool.
It was very, very obvious this time that the gold statue in the fountain is actually a live statue.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it wasn't really clear in the first episode because it was nighttime.
One thing I forgot in the first episode was he was talking to the statue and then some people came up and when they started to walk away, he said, "Don't forget to tip." So that makes it pretty clear.
Oh, that I didn't even catch that.
Yeah.
That was in the first episode at night?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't catch that at all. Well, it was very obvious this one because of the makeup. They did close up on his eyes. You could see his eyeball and shit. Yeah. So he looks a lot like the character from the comics I've done a little research on and see that it's called Crowley or something.
Mm-hmm. I guess he's an informant or something.
Yeah, and he helps get Moon Knight all sorts of supplies and equipment and stuff. He's kind of like a contact for Mark.
Okay.
So maybe that's what that guy's going to be. I don't really get the whole statue thing, but...
I mean, we know is that he's getting all of the story of Mark and Steven and everything, whether he wants it or not.
Right. Again, the music was great in the episode, I thought. Yeah. And I like how they're using it. I loved how, as you mentioned already, that they brought back the Every Grain of Sand by Bob Dylan when we meet the cult again. You know, I thought that was a really nice echo back to that opening sequence in episode one. The song at the end credits is an Arabic Middle Eastern rap song. It's called El Malouk, M-E-L-O-U-K. By Ahmad Saad, but I found it on Spotify and it's great, but it's the DJ's like non-vocal version. I can't find the vocal version, which is what was playing, and I'll have to keep digging. Maybe they'll put it on a soundtrack or something. Yeah. So that was really cool. I like how there's a great sense of all of the Egypt history and sense, and now we're going to be in Egypt, and the music and everything else. I just think they're doing a good job of really, it's not just this, you know, Egyptian god. It's also, there's just this whole, all the Egyptian history and all the Egyptian lore and the museum and the music. And I like how they're handling that.
Mm-hmm.
Although they do need to have some Egyptian actors in here.
They should. Well, apparently, the one who plays Layla is Egyptian. So,
oh, really?
I guess
in real life.
Yeah. So oh, I good. Guess there's. Excellent. I don't really know much about Egypt. I would have thought someone from Egypt would be dark, you know, dark skinned. But I guess there's all different shades. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I have another point that's kind of just more color and details on character motivations and the nature of things.
Okay.
Steven's becoming more aware of Mark. Like in the first scene, they show him waking up, but you can hear the sounds of Moon Knight fighting the jackal from the end of the previous episode.
Right.
I don't think he would have been conscious of that at all. I think now that he's aware of them. And then at the end, of course, we see him in the mirror taking the place of where we've seen Mark
right.
ever since. And Mark says it takes all your willpower to be a fly on the wall. So now he can do that, I guess. We learn more about what people can see. So I would think in that security footage, if they'd been able to see in the bathroom, they would see things sort of breaking without anything touching it, you know?
Yeah. But it would look like he's just going nuts on the place, I think.
Yeah.
That's the implication. I don't love that aspect of this. I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure why that was necessary to do. Maybe that's how it is in the comics. I don't know. But I found that a little jarring.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, if you're going to summon forth this beast from the nether regions or whatever, from the dark, you know, purple land below, why isn't it going to be dimensional? You know, why isn't it going to be visible? It's causing destruction, so it has physicality.
Right.
She throws the liquid on it so she can see a reflection on it. He's smashing things, so he's got physicality. He's there. Why is he invisible? To me, they must have a reason. Yeah, and, I'm not sure what that...
Maybe it makes a little more sense that Khonshu's invisible, because the point with him is he needs these avatars. He doesn't have much power in the real world without them.
Right. And the only effect on the world that you ever see of him do is, you know, some of the wind blows or things shake a little bit
and lights flicker.
Exactly. He's got a very limited. So why would this beast, you know, be able to tear through a bus or smash a car or whatever, but not be visible? I think it's probably more because they don't want to have to explain. The people's reaction
tie Steven to it.
Well, and also people, you know, the news would be reporting it and it would be all this, it'd be this big thing all over the place.
I guess.
And you know, I don't know. They don't want to get into that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They're used to it.
Yeah, you would think.
I don't know. You would think. But there's got to be some reason. But it, so you can't see the Jackals, you can't see Khonshu, but you can see Moon Knight's costume. I guess we just have to accept that.
No, that's a perfect example of how it makes no sense.
Yeah. The whole thing about him getting to the storage locker. So I guess he wanted to, because after he had that experience with the security guy and he feels crazy, he wants to go find the storage locker so he can find some hard evidence and
right, get some evidence. Right.
And I guess that's what the key was, right? Maybe it had the name of the storage company on it. I didn't quite.
Yeah, but the weird thing was, yeah, exactly. But then the weird thing was, is that the guy that brings him up to the locker unlocks it.
Oh, yeah, that is.
And you're not. That's not how those work. You know what I mean? You get your own lock and key, and that's it.
Yeah. Oh well.
It's a little weird.
So he finds this bag with Mark Spector's passport. It says right. He was born in 1987 in Illinois.
Right.
I think I read that this because of the blip that the Marvel shows. Well, Moon Knight is in like 2024 in the MCU, so. That would make Mark Spector around 37. I thought, oh, he looks younger than that. But then I looked up and Oscar Isaac is 43. So about right.
Yeah.
Now Mark says very clearly, because I was thinking, what has Mark been doing with Steven? Mark says to him, I can't have you interfering in what I have left to do. So that would make sense that that's the main reason why he's been trying to keep him in the dark about everything, right. Just so he wouldn't interfere. Mark says, also, I made a deal with Khonshu, but that deal is contingent on you not interfering. And Khonshu later says, you said he wouldn't interfere. So it makes me question, why does Moon Knight have, I thought Khonshu maybe was the reason why he has dissociative identity disorder,
I don't think so.
I guess
so.
We don't know. In the comics, it was because of something that happened when he was younger, a traumatic event.
Right. Well, it's like Ethan Hawke's character says to him that we talked about earlier about, you know, did he pick you because right. Your mind was so easy or, you know, to break, or was it because it was already so broken?
Yeah, I think exactly. It was already broken.
I think it was already broken.
Yeah, because I'm not convinced that... Harrow, okay, that's another thing that's revealed, if we can believe him, is that Harrow used to be the avatar of Khonshu. I don't know if he had a split personality.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
We don't know. But Khonshu also says, you were nothing to Steven. You were nothing more than a corpse, or to Mark, when I found you, which
right.
Kind of what you were saying last time, that he right. Brought him back to life and that's why he owes him.
Right. And then we learned from the two fake cops who do the research on him while he's in the back of the car, that he's wanted for the murder of all these archaeologists.
Right? That he went in with a team of mercs and they lined them up and tied them up execution style.
Right.
Or tied them up and killed them execution style. And also, speaking of his wife, Layla, that they were searching for that scarab together, because when right. She sees it, she's like, oh, you found it. And you, what were you going to keep it for yourself or whatever? What I take, I don't know if this is right, but I think what happened is they were looking for it because Khonshu told Mark to find it. But then, right. You know, we know that like 2 months ago, he stopped answering her calls and I guess started these divorce proceedings. Maybe that's when Khonshu said, right. Oh, she's going to be my next avatar if it doesn't work out with you.
Yep. Yep. I think so. Absolutely. Makes most sense.
Layla said, to your thing about him having maybe another identity, she said when she met Steven, what's going on? Is this Steven the latest fake identity for you? So right. That could just right. Be like a spy thing where you take on, but it also could be an indication there's a third personality.
Yeah.
Let's see. I thought it just bared repeating, since Mark said, I serve Khonshu, I'm his avatar, that Khonshu's the Egyptian god of the moon and he instrumental in the creation of new life. He's known as, well, I read Traveler, Embracer, Pathfinder, and Defender. So that's four. Maybe there's four personalities. And helps people who travel at night, and he's a healer. And an avatar is a manifestation of a deity or released soul in bodily form on Earth. And he says, I'm his avatar. So that's, he's not saying Moon Knight is the Avatar. So maybe he seems to be saying even when he's not wearing this.
Yeah, suit, the human is the Avatar. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because that's how Khonshu can do things in our plane. He's in some other dimension or plane, and mm-hmm. he can only kind of like come in here and influence things, but he can't physically be here. So therefore, so Steven is the Avatar.
Makes sense.
Mark is the Avatar.
And then last thing, Mark apparently and his mom aren't talking, if you can believe what Layla says or what she thinks.
Well, that's another indication to me that there's another personality. You know what I mean?
Do you think, like, because I guess with dissociative identity disorder, there's the personality that's like the original main one. I'm not sure if that's right, but, and then others come along later on. And so there's only one mother. So,
right.
Like it's maybe it's not Mark or Steven that was.
Well, I think all the shit that's going on, like that we saw in the fish being changed out, mm-hmm. the postcards from his mom, but you know, obviously a tape recorder place set up that he's never can actually talk to her. Yeah. That's, you know, it's the guy calling him the wrong name at the museum. They're all kind of ways of fucking with Steven. You know what I mean? And I don't think that's Mark's personality. You know what I mean? Right. He wanted to keep Steven kind of completely separate. And this other personality is somehow enjoys kind of fucking with Steven, messing up his life. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's the implication I get.
Yeah.
I think we're not.
I just don't. If the thing about Mark and his mom not talking, does that mean that Mark actually isn't the original personality either and has never talked to his mom, you know, because his mom, whoever this body originally belonged to, their mom doesn't know Mark or Steven? Is that what it means?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I got the impression that
Mark's the original.
That Mark is the original and that he had some sort of falling out
with
his mother that she was aware of, that she, you know, knew about.
Layla. I mean, the fact that they even mentioned that makes me think it'll come back later and mean something.
Yeah.
All right. I've been watching Severance on Apple TV Plus.
Oh yeah. 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 It looks good. I don't have Apple Plus, but I want to watch it.
It's interesting. And it's another show where it's almost like multiple personalities. It's the premise basically is for some reason these guys have agreed to undergo this procedure where when they go to work, they only have their memories of work while they're there, not their outside lives. And then when they go home, they don't remember anything at work. So they effectively become two separate personalities, but it's really good. It took me a little while to get into it, but once I did, it was good. But this show reminds me of a lot of different movies and shows, Legion, Greatest American Hero, and if I could give you any homework, not that I can, but if I could, it would be to watch Fight Club.
Watch Fight Club?
Yeah, that's the one that comes up a lot. And I also think Moon Knight is a little bit like Iron Man in a certain way, because before the Iron Man movie came out, only comic fans really were that aware of him, if at all. But they got this charismatic actor, Robert Downey Jr., made a kick-ass movie. Moon Knight's similar. I think Moon Knight's even more obscure, but they got Oscar Isaac, you know.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's cool.
Well, I think they seem to, I think it's a strategy, you know, that Marvel has, that it's helping to do a couple of things. It's helping to keep the material really, really fresh, because you're not kind of repeating, you know, for instance, I just went and saw the Batman, the new Batman movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. I recommend it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was awesome.
More than those horrible Christopher Nolan movies.
I didn't like the last one, but I liked the first two Christopher Nolan ones.
I'm just teasing.
But a lot better than the Joel Schumacher ones. Oh my God, those were horrible. but you know, even I love Batman and I'm a huge Batman fan. But even I have kind of like gotten tired of watching the rebirth of Batman in movies. You know, now based on my age, which I won't repeat here, which is just won't slow down. You know, I've seen this rebirth three times. And actually four times if you include the Justice League Batman guy, Ben Affleck. And
yeah,
it's like, how many times can you redo the damn thing? It just, even though this is a very different version, it still found it a little bit kind of redundant. You know what I mean? And I think Marvel's trying to avoid that by introducing and deep diving into their lore and their history to create unique, different, huge variety of characters. So that you're constantly wanting more, you know, also the storytelling style being kind of being linear and all in the same universe as opposed to, self, you know,
yeah, just self-contained,
self-contained, right?
Separate.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And that also keeps it fresh too, because, you know, it's not going to be, oh, we're going to learn the origin of Captain America again. Great. You know,
yeah,
you know what I mean? So you only need to tell that once. And, but I think also by just going in and digging, I'm kind of repeating myself, but digging in deeper into the character pantheon helps that too. And it helps stretch out. Because now, look, I mean, they're producing, you know, three, four series a year and then three, four movies a year. I mean, that's a huge amount of content, you know. And they don't want to have to repeat themselves. So, you know, the best bet is to create successful new characters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after they did such a great job with the whole Infinity Gauntlet storyline, doling it out over like 12 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I want to see like Secret Wars or.
Yeah, of course.
You know, maybe they're doing some Secret Invasion thing, but I don't think it's going to be as big as it was in the comics. But, you know, big, big stories like that.
Well, they're going to have a Secret Invasion series, and then they're also going to have that. Either that goes into or comes out of the new the Captain Marvel sequel, which is also going to be all about the Secret Invasion. So, but it's not going to be, it's not going to be MCU Universal, you know, the way that Endgame was and stuff.
And I'm excited that they're delving into the whole concept of the multiverse, which I don't think mainstream audiences would have been ready for until now, but now they've been exposed to all these comic book concepts and so
on. Well, one of it, I agree. And one of the, there's two great things about that. One is that it's a fantastic part of the comics that it is daunting. So I applaud them for going into it, but it has created such a wonderful stories in the comics. It was a great garden to work in for the movies, but it also accomplishes another thing, which comes back to my first point, which is it allows you to continue the story even though actors change or characters die. For instance, you know, now we're getting Loki again, even though Loki died, and you don't feel like you're getting cheated, like, oh, everybody comes back. You know what I mean? No, this is, you know what I mean? It's, this is the story makes sense that he's come back. And then, you know, eventually, you know, Iron Man's gone, but you know what? There'll be another Iron Man. They're talking, in fact, about recasting Black Panther. I mean, I think it would be a mistake to continue the MCU without a Black Panther. He's an incredibly important part to so many great stories and crossovers too, like Secret Wars, that, you know, this provides an opportunity. Now you can recast it by simply having it be a Black Panther from another universe. So they're slightly different.
I think they're going to have Letitia, what's her name?
Oh, I think she'll do it for a while, but I think they're going to bring in somebody that will be
universe version
of T'Challa. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's also a way for them to cast a new actor who can get another 10-15 years of portraying the character. You know what I mean? I mean, that's that when you're having the success that Marvel has, you're faced with new problems. They're good problems. They're good problems to have, but they are still problems. And, you know, you're not going to have Robert Downey Jr. at 80 years old playing Iron Man. You know what I mean? So that had to end. And
do that by having alternate reality versions, but also just having new people take up the mantle, like with
correct.
Falcon and Winter Soldier.
True. True.
Yeah. So, hey, well, we better get back on track here. I mean, I think most people will find it interesting if you're Marvel fans to hear this kind of a talk, and we could just keep on going for hours, but I'm having to rein in some of my own thoughts on it. But I just, my last note on Moon Knight is, I don't think I mentioned this before, but Khonshu's voice is F. Murray Abraham, who played probably most famously Antonio Salieri in Amadeus back in the 80s. But
yeah,
he's C.W. Longbottom on Mythic Quest, also on Apple TV. It's a comedy. It's pretty good on there. And
he's great. Well, we bringing him up for a reason, or
no? It's just my last note. I was just going through my list of notes. I think he's good. He you mentioned Venom, and now I can't get that out of my head.
You know, I'll tell you how good he is, because the first time I heard it, it was like Venom, and it was in my head. But by the end of that episode, the first episode, I wasn't really thinking about that as much. And this episode, the second episode, it was gone. He's created a character. It's not just a punchline, and he's much deeper than, and his sarcasm and cynicism is more, it's a little bit more sophisticated than the Venom, you know? It's just richer. It's good.
Yeah. He's a different character for sure. Yeah. Different. Okay. But he's also this person that talks in your mind like this, and he's kind of hostile, so there are some similarities.
But that bird head, man, that bird head.
Yeah, it's so,
oh my
great.
God, as a visual person, that is just whoever came up with that was just brilliant.
When they're walking through the village, Harrow and Steven, and the camera goes up and you see him crouched on the roof there, that was
yes.
All right, that's good. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. Okay, we're back with some news. Just a couple quick things. There have been some QR codes in both episodes.
Yeah.
In episode one, it was in the museum on the wall when he was talking to the girl about mummification.
Yep.
And in this episode, it was on the door of the storage unit. So if you scan that, it'll take you to a webpage, marvel.com, where you can get a couple of free comics, issues 32 and 33 of Werewolf by Night, which was the first appearance of Moon Knight back in the 70s.
Is it a reprint they did of it, or?
It's just a web version.
Oh, web version. Okay.
So you read it online. The first page says, "This previously published content includes negative depictions of people or cultures. These stereotypes were wrong then and are wrong now. Social change is a journey, and we must acknowledge where we've come from to build a more inclusive future." So just a little disclaimer there for a 1970s comic.
Jesus, that's pretty bad. That's pretty sad when you got to freaking do that for your comics, man.
It makes me curious to read it now.
Yeah.
See what that is.
I'm sure it was really negative portrayals of like indigenous peoples.
It's something, yeah.
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting to see what his origin was.
Yeah.
Or first appearance anyway.
Well, like Shang-Chi, the movie they just came out with, based on a fantastic comic back in the, well, actually there's current versions too, but the original runs were you know, really big, and they were popular during the 70s Kung Fu breakout stuff, Bruce Lee and everything
else. Bruce Lee and all
that. But they had these horrible racist portrayals, you know, his father was Fu Manchu. And I can remember these covers with this like stereotypical yellow, you know, Asian looking villain. And it's just, pretty bad.
Yep. And now with the Shang-Chi movie, they've gotten more Asians involved in creating it and trying to do it respectfully and everything. So that's great.
Have you heard about this movie, Everything All at Once or Everything Everywhere?
I saw the trailer and it looks really fantastic.
Oh my God, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
Holy cow. That was fantastic.
I want to go
Michelle
watch
Yeoh, it. What made me think of is Michelle Yeoh's in it. I love everything she's in.
I love. I really like. You know, I sound. I'm probably going to sound like I'm virtue signaling or something, but most of the stories up until 10, 15 years ago were, at least that we got here in America, were about white males, and and of course, as a kid growing up, I could identify, so it was cool for me. But now seeing more stories with different types of people at the center, it's awesome. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's much richer.
Yeah, and it just, it really opens your eyes, like, yeah, why did it have to be the same thing all the time? It didn't. And seeing, and my kids are half Asian, so seeing Shang-Chi or, you know, the new Disney, what is it, Turning Red? I think it's the Pixar.
Yeah.
You watch that. It's fantastic to see just sort of different points of view and everything. I always liked Orange is the New Black, which is about all these women in prison. And it just made me realize, wow, there's not a lot of story where women get to be all different kinds of things and not just like sex objects and everything.
Right. Crazy Rich Asians was a fantastic movie. Yeah. I really enjoyed that movie. And it was, it could have been any rom-com-y type of thing. You know what I mean?
It's, right.
It wasn't, you know what I mean? The fact that it all took place in over there in an Asian country or whatever was irrelevant.
I mean, it's, I think there are definitely aspects of different cultures that are unique and worth celebrating, but also that's one reason why I like having different types of people at the center of these stories, because you can see the differences and celebrate them. And also you can see how we're all connected too.
Exactly.
And how you can identify now, with certain parts of it.
Now, explain to me, what's virtue signaling? I've never heard that term before.
It's when you say something that's supposed to be like the enlightened way to think, or the way that society is now saying we're supposed to think, and you're only saying it because you want to show everyone that you think that way.
Ah, okay.
You know what I mean?
Got it.
But I'm not trying to do that. I really mean it. Like, I've been enjoying seeing new stories come out with from different types of perspectives.
Yeah.
I'm proud of that I enjoy it, but that's not why I'm saying it. Anyway, the last piece of news is that I read that the creators looked at Moon Knight's whole history for inspiration for the show, but especially the Jeff Lemire, Greg Smallwood run from 2016. And I saw there's a trade paperback of that, so I might check it out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, wait, there is one more rumor too, or one more piece, is that I saw a rumor about a possible upcoming cameo in the series, the Moon Knight series.
Oh, I hope character. So.
Who, as far as I know, hasn't been seen in the MCU before.
Oh, it's really?
Kind of a minor character, but I don't think I really want to say who it is in case people don't want to get spoiled. So I would just say Google it if you're curious.
Bastard.
It's Superman. No, I'm just kidding.
it's the origin of Batman. Speaking of DC car wrecks, how about Ezra Miller?
Oh, I know.
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
He choked a fan a while back, and I'm like, okay, well, is he still going to get to do the Flash movie? And now he's like breaking into some hotel room, and what did he do?
I don't know. He threatened people. He broke into hotel rooms. He's a mess.
He really is.
And,
God.
Oh, my God.
And
I'm
excited about the Flash movie, but.
I was.
Yeah. Like, the idea of it sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. All right, let's move on to some listener feedback.
All right. Alicia Stout, she writes, I really enjoyed this episode a lot. I am digging the fact that I know absolutely nothing about the comic, which is making it more interesting and fun to watch. It has great humor, fantastic story, and I love the music in this episode, especially at the end. And Oscar Isaac is killing it as Steven/Mark. I'll be honest, I don't watch a lot of Marvel shows or movies because honestly, it overwhelms me with how much there is to watch, and I don't know where to start. However, I'm going with this one and really enjoying it so far. Looking forward to more episodes. Yeah, Alicia, I totally understand your feelings about that, and I think probably why this is working for you so well is because it really isn't dependent at all on the MCU.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? It's you don't have to know anything about the MCU to enjoy this particular series. Because it's starting it from fresh, you know,
yeah.
And it doesn't tie into any of those storylines. So,
it's a good place to start. And I would say most of the shows and movies do a pretty good job of being entertaining on their own. I mean, but some tie into stuff more than others, especially the last two, like Avengers movies. But they're all still fun to watch, even if you don't know all.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's a misconception, and also one that has been propagated by a lot of social media conversation about watching the whole MCU experience. You know, the celebration of the 10 years and how the whole Thanos storyline, you know, was unrolled over the 10 episodes and or the 10 movies and over 10 years, not 10 movies, but 10 years. And so I think there's just this kind of belief in the buzz world, you know, that you had to watch it all in order to get it. And you don't. I agree with you. You really don't.
Yeah. You know? That's what's great about the Marvel movies is they're good movies. Like, it's not all about the plot. It's just fun and cool.
Yep.
Okay. Alma Contreras says, I'm really enjoying this series, but I admit I'm fairly new to the Marvel universe. So that's probably why I'm a little slow picking up on stuff. I'm watching, but I feel like I'm seeing everything through Steven's eyes, and I'm a little confused and struggling to keep things straight. LOL, the podcast does help. That's good. Steven has no idea of his personality disorder, and Khonshu is the Moon Knight? Sort of. I think Khonshu is... No, I don't, Khonshu isn't the Moon Knight. Khonshu's the god, the Egyptian god of the moon, and Steven slash Mark are his avatar, so they're his physical, like... He can control what he can control physically on Earth, and they turn into the Moon Knight.
Right. But I think to her question, the powers that they have
are because of Khonshu.
Correct. They're they're imbued to them by the Khonshu god.
Yeah. So he basically, to simplify what we just said, Khonshu made Mark into the Moon Knight.
Right.
To be his representative on Earth. She goes on, I wonder how long Mark Spector takes over consciousness before he lets Steven come back. I mean, Mark is married, for crying out loud, LOL. I totally find myself yelling out loud, for fuck's sake, Steven, just let Mark take over. I was kind of feeling like that too.
So was Khonshu.
Yeah. And Mark. One last question about those creatures. Are they like demon mummies summoned from the underworld? Yeah, I think that pretty well sums that up. Demons.
Well, they were jackals, I think,
underworld creatures, yeah. But they look like monsters.
Well, there's a god, one of the gods, I can't Anubis. Remember the name. Anubis. And he has a jackal head, and he's the god of death, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they might have something to do with him. Yeah. She finishes up, I'm going to keep watching, but normally... Shows that mess with my mind, aka mindfuck me, like Legion, I let go of pretty fast, LOL. So I look forward to going through this with the podcast. I mean, I don't know if Alma had seen the second episode before writing this, but I feel like it's getting clearer and clearer as it goes
on. Yeah. I think there was a little bit of confusion in the beginning, just as there would be with any story about a multi-personality person.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're right, like... She said she's seeing it through Steven's eyes, and that was kind of the point. Like him discovering what was going on and being confused by it, just like us.
Yep. Mufavo says, my questions from first week remain, but think we got some hints regarding the quote rules. One, when awake, whomever has current control of the body / decision-making has to voluntarily pass control over.
Seems
right. Yeah, I think that's definitely, I think that was definitely even made more clear this episode, with the smashing of the mirrors and all that stuff. Two, do assume that is why Mark takes control after Steven falls asleep. Yeah, probably.
Yep.
Does this change now that Steven is aware of Mark?
We don't know.
It does seem like if you're willing to give over, then it happens.
Then it happens. You know what I mean? But if Steven doesn't want to give over but falls asleep, then can Mark take over? Right. I think yes, but we don't really know.
Yeah. I think number three, I think if I were Steven, I would have had many, many more questions for Mark. Still wondering if Moon Knight is somehow restricted to when Moon is overhead. They haven't talked about that yet, but in the comic, my understanding is that his powers are strongest at the full moon.
Okay.
So the more moon is out, the stronger his powers are, the more powerful he is. I don't know what all his powers are. I assume there's more than just strength.
Strong and fast, yeah.
Yeah. Five, what do you think terms of agreement with Khonshu involve? Did Arthur Haro say he was previous Khonshu avatar? Well, wait a minute. What do you think terms of agreement with Khonshu involve? I think it's just to exist. He was dead.
But they say they have a deal, and Mark says, I'm going to do everything I can to do it, but it's sort of vague, but it seems to me like it's just preventing Amit from coming to this plane. But then again, I'm thinking this through right now, that's sort of an open-ended deal, because how do you know for sure that Amit's never going to come unless you're constantly trying to prevent it? So I don't know.
Right. Did Arthur Haro say he was previous Khonshu avatar? Yes, he did.
Yes.
Which sets, they got to talk about that more, for sure. If so, can we assume Mark/Steven can survive being separated from Khonshu?
Oh, good point.
Well, again,
if he's telling the truth.
Yeah, but also I think he was resurrected. I don't know if Haro was. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because
he said to him, I found you as a corpse.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if that's how Khonshu gets all his avatars, but maybe not. We can't assume that.
Yeah, I don't know. So that, or maybe Haro is also dead.
Mm-hmm. Because then if that is how he gets all his avatars, then that would be even more ominous for Layla. Like, would he have to kill her first?
Exactly. But it also means that Haro jumped to Emmett because he was going to die otherwise. So he wouldn't exist. Mm.
Maybe, yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. Kind of assume that since partnership was because of Mark's death from Comics Not Shown, that he was living in borrowed time. Thanks for podcasting. So helpful. I think we kind of...
Yeah.
That's kind of the belief, at least at this point. But it does, the Haro does add a weird twist, because we don't know whether he died or if he was possessed.
Right. And we don't know whether Mark can stay alive afterwards.
Correct.
Because we don't know that. Yeah. Evan Shapiro writes in about last week's episode. He said, I listened to the cast and was thinking about the line, there's chaos in you, when Steven/Mark/Moon Knight's soul was weighed. I was also reflecting on your speculations regarding team-ups in the future MCU, including the one with mystical and magical heroes like Moon Knight, Blade, and Ghost Rider. Anyhow, I'm getting off track. I was thinking maybe there's chaos magic in you. Might this give a good excuse to cross over with Scarlet Witch?
Hmm.
I feel like that's a bit of a stretch, but I think it would be cool.
Well, it's interesting that the color is really important in the powers
magic
in the Marvel universe. And
Scarlet Witch is red.
Yeah, Scarlet Witch is red, which was chaos, but also purple, like the other witch in that
Agatha.
Agatha has purple power. And that's dark magic. Mm-hmm. And the Power Stone is purple and can destroy a whole planet, you know.
But Black Panther's purple.
But Black Panther's purple too. But there's also a lot of indication that as we talked about briefly last week, that the Panther God is one of the Egyptian pantheon gods.
Right. So that might connect.
I don't know.
And then I was thinking about that, and it made me think, okay, so like, it feels like Odin and Thor, you know, they're what the people in the MCU, that's kind of how the Norse mythology was developed, but actually they're kind of like aliens, maybe, if I'm understanding all that right. So is that also true with the Egyptian gods?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, I think there's a theory that the Egyptian gods were actually aliens. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think in the... in terms of the Norse gods and Asgardians, I think the line that gave that away was when he says to Jane, you know, what you call magic, we call science. Something like that. And
it was what you call science, we call magic, I think.
One of the two. But the implication being that, you know, what looks like magic to you in the world is actually also science. It's just you don't understand it yet. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
And we do. You know what I mean?
Right, so. Right, right. Okay, and we got one call, and it's from Greg Schwamm. Here we go.
Oh, Greg.
Hey, guys. This is Greg. This episode was super disturbing. Episode 2. Am I stuck in my body sometimes? Am I trying to get out? Is the real me really forced down by this person who goes to work and has kids and all that? it's crazy. Like, I get now that Merc died, and very much a Ghost Rider and Johnny Blaze reminiscence. But this was really kind of a mind fuck coming out of this one. A couple of notes. F. Murray Abraham is amazing as Khonshu, and Oscar Isaacs is absolutely killing it. He was just flipping fantastic. And just every part of this. And then seeing Lele was cool. Anyway, I'm sure you guys will cover that stuff. But I thought it was really well done. And look forward to the podcast. But
thanks, dude. Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. That was fun.
Thanks, Greg. That was awesome.
It's fun doing listener feedback on this show. It feels like we're reading the letters page in the back of the comic and then answering it.
The soapbox. Stan Lee's soapbox.
Right.
Awesome. Awesome.
All right, that's our show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. That was a good one.
Fun.
I mentioned last week that I was going to try and do tributes.
Yeah.
I just got derailed this week with some other projects going on, it is still in my plan. So
sweet.
I will let you know when I got that.
Thanks for bringing that up, but you're still going to. Okay, so I can't wait to see it. All right, if you want to write in and leave us a message, we love that. You can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
While you're there, be sure to check out other shows.
Like, we're doing the Walking Dead mid-trimester wrap-up this week of the final season. And we have a few more episodes in our Yellow Jackets rewatch, which is a lot of fun. And then Better Call Saul starts in about a week and a half here, coming up quick.
The Walking Dead, help me, I'm so confused. This is the last season, season 11, but it's going to be in three parts. Is that correct?
Yeah, and they're three sets of eight.
Three sets of eight. And did they just finish the middle set? Or it
actually airs on AMC this Sunday, but it was on AMC Plus last week. You know, AMC.
And that's the final one for this.
Yeah, then there's eight
middle
more
section.
After that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I've watched the first eight, but I didn't start this eight yet.
I think you'll dig it. I think it's been getting pretty good lately.
Good. Excellent.
All right. That is our show.
Sounds great. Thanks for listening, everybody. Appreciate it.
That's fun. See you next week.
Take care.
Crack those mirrors. I don't know.
Yeah, right.